Remember back in 2018 when Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse blew our minds? The Spider-Man multiverse was a triumph that only brilliant animators and inspired voice acting could ever make possible. At least that's what we thought. Join us today while we break down the movies that made all of this happen, including the revolutionary Spider-Man No Way Home, from symbiotes to spider-hams, and everything in between. This is the best and the worst of Spider-Man. Hey everybody, welcome back to the best and the worst. That's right, we're here. We didn't quit on you guys. We just had a little bit of a hiatus with the holidays, with travel, with work, and all the other things going on. I'm back. I'm Andrew Guy. Joining me as always is my good friend, movie trivia champion of the world, Ben Bateman. Man, it feels like forever since we've been sitting in these chairs, even though these aren't the chairs that we normally, you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're saying, man. Yeah, we do this sweet thing where we make the set look different by sitting on high stools and angling towards each other normally. And I know, guys, it looks like we're in another dimension right now. But no, we're happy to be doing this. The holidays combined with, let's just call it what it is. The world is a literal festering pile of disease. We're doing the cautious thing here for a second, staying away from each other for the week to record the show. But look, the truth is, this is not a show that we could even entertain the possibility of missing. Work and health and all that pushed back for about 6 weeks. But we knew we had to do this one. This is a huge show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we're in different rooms right now, but hopefully you guys will still be getting the same experience. Spider-Man No Way Home, you know, I feel like...
Wait, we're not doing the Matt Damon episode? I thought we were doing that.
Oh, right. Matt Damon. Yeah, maybe you guys just missed it on your playlist. We're going to give Matt the Jimmy treatment, I believe. Is that what it is? Jimmy Kimmel treatment?
Jimmy Kimmel treatment. Yeah, one of my favorite sketches ever.
I guarantee it'll happen eventually. It will happen eventually. But we don't know when. I guess you'll just have to stay tuned in to the best and the worst. We are here to talk Spider-Man No Way Home, and we're here to talk about the best and the worst Spider-Man. Ben, what is the best way for people to support us and this podcast that has actually been pretty dang successful, even though we've only done, this is our seventh episode.
Yeah, you know, you guys have been wonderful in getting us off the ground with this thing. We did a kind of a trial first season, we'll call it, of six episodes before we took a little bit of a holiday break. And here we are back. We're so excited to be doing it. If you guys want to support that, you want to make sure the show keeps on going, there's a few key ways to do it. The first thing is if you have me watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to this, which is, I think, probably more likely, go ahead and hit the follow button if you're on Spotify. Subscribe if you're on Apple. Leave a review and a rating. Those are the key things, guys. You leave a quick review. The show is great. I don't like that they pushed Matt Damon. You could write that if you wanted. Be my guest. But whatever you want to do, leave a review, leave a 5-star rating if you can. And it does help the show continue to be successful as we get excited about bringing on new topics for 2022, which will be an awesome, awesome year of content. So thanks for being here for this one. We can't wait to have you on the next one.
Yeah, and while you're on Spotify, go check out Ben. Go check out Ben Bateman on Spotify. He's got a lot of great music up there, getting a lot of plays out there in the world. So why not add to it while you're supporting the best and the worst of Spider-Man because of Spider-Man No Way Home. So let's just start this episode off like we love to start our episodes off. What's the first thing that pops into your head when someone says the word Spider-Man?
Geez, right now, the first thing that pops into my head is an MCU movie I'm looking forward to, which I realized after watching this movie in the theater is exactly something that I love having in my life. And when the medium ones come out, the ones that I'm just a little less excited about come out, it makes you realize how special this thing really is when it's at the elite level and it's firing on all cylinders. And that's what Spider-Man feels. It's like an S-tier elite level property for me right now. And it didn't used to be, the truth is. We're going to talk about a lot of the different movies in this franchise. I didn't feel that way when the Andrew Garfield movies were coming out. You know, I didn't even really totally feel that way when Homecoming came out. It's become that way. Right now, when I think of it, this is premium level MCU stuff for me. And I get excited about that.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you say all that stuff, because like when I say the word Spider-Man, you know, for so long, it was just one entity. It was like, I thought about Tobey Maguire. I thought about Andrew Garfield. I thought about the Green Goblin. But then with what you're talking about in the MCU and kind of how widespread it's become, the fact that Spider-Man has shown up in other movies, he's been showing up since 2016. But now in 2021, it feels like we're finally getting like all the things that we want out of Spider-Man. The love with MJ, the suit, him being a badass, like him kind of fully realizing himself as Spider-Man and Peter Parker. So I think the first thing that pops in my head when I think of Spider-Man
is honestly, it's just Tom Holland now. It's so weird. Yeah. And maybe, and I would love to have this conversation in like 10 years from now and come back and, you know, have someone ask me the exact same question, because I guarantee you the answer will be different. I bet Tom Holland will still be in maybe the top three things that come to my mind, but who knows what's going to happen over the next 10 years with the MCU and with Spider-Man specifically. You kind of touched on it just a minute ago, man, but what were your expectations kind of going into No Way Home? Because mine were, it's like if you buy something that's made out of gold, it's like, you know, it's going to be awesome. You know, it's going to be made out of gold when you get it. But how cool is it really going to be? Like, is it going to be a golden toilet or is it going to be a golden compass? Who knows? I don't know why I made a reference to the golden compass there.
I thought that was a wonderful reference that you just made just now. I'm glad you did it. I'm sure the audience is glad that you did it.
I'm sure Daniel Craig is glad that I did.
Leave us a review on here about our references to the golden compass. No, I really think that when I went into this movie, it changed. And look, the media cycle did a really good job of getting us hyped about this movie. They did a very, very good job of leaking what they needed to leak when they needed to leak it. I don't think I quite realized the affection people had for the old Spider-Man movies in earnest until we got closer and closer to this movie. Like, I think it started to really make sense that Spider-Man's been this kind of forever character for people for longer than I think I realized, just because I didn't care about the Amazing Spider-Man movies when they were coming out very much. So to me, it was like, you know, he was a very good character who is part of a greater MCU, and he's succeeding really well inside of it. And that's the best that we have, right? Like, that's what it was. Right. And so going into this movie, it was like, this is just another high-level, big MCU character movie. All that other stuff, as far as the characters and the, you know, the big reveals, like, people started calling this an Endgame-level movie. And like, they were talking about the trailer for this movie months ago. Like, people were so excited for this trailer to drop. And everybody was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. It took so long for the trailer to finally drop.
Yeah.
I just didn't relate to the whole Endgame level movie idea for a while. It took me a while to start to really think of this as like a movie of that magnitude. I just can't believe this movie got even close to that level. And
so to go back to the question, what were your expectations? Were you hyped? Were you not hyped? Did you think it was going to be good? Did you think it was, like, where were you at? I mean, everyone else existed in the world. We all saw the trailer. We all knew how much everyone was already talking about it. But what was Ben thinking?
I think my expectation was that I was going into something that I was supposed to think was an Endgame level event. And I was skeptical. And I was like, I hope this is everything I want it to be. I hope it is. I really hope this is great. But those are insane expectations. Those can't be met. So, like, I just went in, I think, pretty skeptical and ready to walk out with a medium opinion. I think I called you on the way and told you that. Like, I want this to be great, but...
Yeah, I mean, it just felt like there was so much hype around this, so many people being announced. It really did feel like Garfield and Maguire were going to be in the movie. It felt like all the old villains were going to come back, but how many of them? We knew Molina was going to be there. If Molina was going to be there, how could Dafoe not be there? It felt convoluted and messy and sticky and kind of annoying. I'll be honest. I was like kind of annoyed. I was like so ready for No Way Home to just come out so that we could either just like it or not like it and just stop talking about what we thought was going to happen, which again, you talk about like an incredible marketing team. That is who you want making your movie. Like, yes, Spider-Man is a loaded movie. There's so many things about it because of the MCU. Who's going to be there? Doctor Strange is there. We know he's going to be there. So who else in the MCU is going to be there? You know, all that was going on. But I'll be honest, going into it, my expectations were through the roof, even though I was incredibly skeptical and I was kind of annoyed. I like don't like the hype train for things. Oh. I like when people are excited for something, but like hearing about it nonstop for months, I was like, there's no way this is going to actually live up to its expectations. And it totally did.
Well, because
like did that and then some.
The other thing too is like they kept trying to bury or hide little pieces of the leaks. Like something would get leaked, they'd release an image of like the characters jumping forward and it looking like somebody was punching something that wasn't there, and you'd be like, oh,
right.
Well, they've clearly digitally removed something, right? But so then I was like, okay, Tom and Toby and Andrew, they're all going to be together in a movie. I think I can expect that. So now that I know that that's happening, what am I really looking forward to? How is this really going to blow my mind? That was my feeling, right? Like, how is this really going to deliver past the gimmick? And it did, as you said. That's the jaw drop about this movie. It totally did, somehow.
Yeah, I mean, not only did it like touched on the nostalgia of all of us that grew up with the other Spider-Man movies, the Spider-Men, the two of them, but it actually made it work. It wasn't just like, oh, here they are to make you feel like you're young again. It was like, here they are. They're bad guys again, but they're in this different world. We have to figure out how to make this work. And they totally did. There was all the heart that you want from the Spider-Man movies, because they, in the Raimi ones and in the Garfield ones, there were the web ones, I should say. There was a lot of heart in moments of those movies, even if in over time, maybe those franchises won't be looked at as favorably as the Tom Holland one, but it was really important that they had that. So when we talk about the theater experience for No Way Home, it felt like everyone else in my theater, at least, because we didn't get to see this one together, was basically on the exact same page and then some. Like, everyone was so hyped, excited. They loved every reveal, every single moment that I think you dreamed there would be a pop as a filmmaker. No Way Home got it on those and on ones you maybe wouldn't expect.
Yeah, it's like it almost makes you feel bad for all the other MCU movies that came in the 2 years prior, because they just don't get to be loaded. I mean, like, by all accounts, I think we can all agree Shang-Chi was a great movie. It has a lot of great things going for it. It didn't get anywhere close to the kind of pop this movie got. Like, it wasn't even in the same universe. And that's just, you know, it's the, obviously, Tom Holland, three movies, the character being around for 20 years on the big screen has earned that. So there is the buildup. That's why people think of it as Endgame, right? Endgame is 10 plus years of movies at that point. But I definitely think that all of us in the theater, there was just so many moments to react to. It felt loaded. You was the word you used. That's the best word to use. It was so jam packed with stuff. You know, it just didn't feel like you can't have a movie like this if you just create a character and put it in theaters. It's impossible, because the audience will never have that kind of connection to something that they've never seen before. It's why, like, trilogies, you know, the third one is always a big deal.
And like, as much as people might want to just be like, oh, well, this is so incestuous, it's just the MCU banking off of the MCU being cool and bringing back characters that we used to like or that we're familiar with, and to be able to do all that, to orchestrate and coordinate all that, and then to actually be able to execute it in a movie, even if it's not new bad guys, it's still a new situation with a new Spider-Man in a new generation, with a new audience out there, with a new comic book audience out there, with a new movie-going audience out there. And the fact that they were able to, I think, satisfy everyone, again, this movie was incredible. It's the number 6 movie of all time on IMDb now. Of course, right? Recency bias is the king of the IMDb top 250.
That's still insane. That means so many people gave this movie such a high score, a crazy high score.
I'm pretty sure it's a 9.0, and we'll get to it as we move farther throughout the show. But like, that just lets you know that even if it was Rotten Tomatoes, 9 out of 10 people walked out of that theater going, holy shit, that movie was great. What was your biggest, two things. What was the biggest pop for you, and what was your favorite moment? I don't want to say fist pump, because maybe it's because I'm being selfish here, because my favorite moment I don't think is quite a fist pump, but I don't know. What was the biggest pop first for you in your theater?
Biggest pop in the theater, I think, has to have been when Andrew Garfield took off his mask. I think that's the biggest one. I'm pretty sure. I mean, interestingly enough, the two biggest pops in the movie were both Andrew Garfield moments, which is pretty indicative of just like how much people love Andrew Garfield. But I think that was the big one. I think that was the one that got the most people went nuts.
It's just because, and again, you talk about publicity and marketing, it's because everyone in the world was waiting for Andrew Garfield to like pull a Tom Holland and spoil it, right? Like, if there was any semblance or any even hint of the multiverse, how could you not bring back these two guys, or at least one of these two guys that's still young enough, that's still working? Like, Andrew Garfield felt like it had to be the guy. So for me, I think the biggest pop was probably that moment as well. The other moment might have been all three of them swinging. Yeah. That's like maybe third place, as they're all swinging around the Statue of Liberty at the same time and like using the webs to fling each other forward and stuff. Just like three Spider-Men, just like complete nerd, like comic book.
There's like, oh my God.
It was incredible. It was like the coolest thing. But you know what I think actually got the biggest pop? And I think it's because of the anticipation of just like, oh my God, when's it coming? When's something coming that's going to blow our minds as a collective audience? It was when we saw Daredevil. It was when we saw Charlie Cox. My theater lost their minds. And I think the coolest part about that was like, okay, so we've all seen Daredevil, and everyone in this room has seen it apparently, which is also awesome. And then the other part of it is that like, we are all that excited about his performance as Daredevil to now be a part of the MCU. Who knows how far that'll go? I just think it was a really cool thing to just, again, we're in on the joke. We're in on that thing of seeing him and being like, man, this is so great. The MCU is appreciating how excellent this guy was at being a very difficult superhero to pull off.
Yeah, that moment was huge. It was pretty loaded. Yeah, the other one I was referencing was when Garfield saves Zendaya. I think that's the other one that people went crazy for. But I agree with you. When the Charlie Cox moment happened, I mean, I love that series. And he does a great job, as you mentioned, with a very difficult character. So I think all of those. Then I think to answer your other question, my sort of fist pump, or we used to say our I can't remember what the hell we called it, the emotional ah moment. explosion of emotion or something.
Explosion of emotion. Yeah, that's what it was. There was a couple of them in this movie.
Couple of them. Yeah, I think for me, it was Aunt May. For me was the moment in the movie where I was the most affected. It doesn't happen that often when I watch a movie where I find I'm kind of like edge of my seat and my jaw's dropped and my face isn't moving. And if I'm starting to tear up, I don't like catch myself or like wipe it. I just am like locked onto the screen. It's something has to be happening. That's so just like, I remember when Tony got stabbed by Thanos at the end of Infinity War, having a similar, just like, I can't believe this is happening moment where it's just, you can hear a pin drop. And that's how it was for me with the Aunt May stuff. When she starts to go down and you're like, wait, what? This is happening. She's not going to get saved. What?
Like, well, she feels like a, what is the word I'm trying to think of here? Like, she feels almost like a character in a video game that you can't hurt. They're just there to like provide you with certain things. Like, she's there to be Aunt May. She has to be there for Aunt May. Like, she doesn't get in the fights. And if she's a part of them, she's safe. Like, Peter's always protecting her. Happy's always protecting her. It came out of nowhere. And then I think what was so brilliant about the execution of her execution, pardon me, was that, like, she's standing there, the glider comes in and hits her, and you're like, wow, Aunt May's a beast.
Yeah.
She just took that glider to the back, and then the building falls on her or whatever, and she's the first one to get up. But then it's the slow play. And this is, like, why the MCU has done something that no one else has ever done with, I'd say 98% of movies that have been made about superheroes, is like, they have that crazy superhero, you know, beyond your reason of imagination, like, just drop anything that you're trying to ground in reality. But then they have these moments that are so filled with heart that hit you so hard. And then again, what I loved about this was the slow playing of it, that she didn't even know. She didn't like actually know what was going on. And that's just brilliance in writing, in directing, in whoever decided that that's how it was going to go down. Like, yes, that scene was devastating because, like, Peter Parker lost Aunt May, but it was also the way that they decided to show us that it happened. I just thought it was like a masterclass in cinema and totally heartbreaking.
Yeah, it destroyed me. I mean, when it was over, I think it ended, and then I had this moment where I looked over this guy who's sitting next to me, and like,
he's like, "Stop talking to me, dude. Please stop talking to me."
I saw the movie alone. I really wanted to see it on Thursday, and I just decided last minute I was just going to go, and so I got like the last ticket at this theater that was available. And that's what's so cool about movies like this, is that everyone's so hyped. It doesn't matter if it's a total stranger. Yep. This person next to me was like just as jacked up, right? I was just like, you know what I mean? Like, I came in like 40 seconds late, and I was like, dude, anything happened? He's like, oh yeah, this happened. You swing. And like, he just like was like, nice. Just caught me up right away. Like, you know, zero hesitation. He's like, put your mask on, bro. No, that didn't
happen. Put your mask on. Stop eating my popcorn. But I don't know you.
But I remember like it, you know, Aunt May dies and Peter runs away. And I looked over and I was like, and the other Spider-Man haven't even shown up yet. And I was just like, I was like, we have a whole movie left. This is nuts. You know what I mean? Like, I can't totally even believe there's so much movie left. This is amazing.
I think that my favorite moment in the movie was another explosion of emotion moment. Now, don't get me wrong. The action in this was so sweet. There was so many funny parts of this. Like, the youth pastor line, I think, was like everyone's favorite, because he totally does look exactly like what that is supposed to be. And the fighting, like, with the physics, I think I talked to you about it. I talked to our friends Jason and Matt about it as well. But like, in Captain America Winter Soldier, when the Russos, the Russos were like, oh, this is how we should show how badass and superhuman Captain America is. Let's make him do these things that are kind of relatable, but so extraordinary. And so, like, what we got so much of in this version of Spider-Man, I think, was, like, him using the physics and the swinging and his webs to, like, really kick that hand-to-hand combat up to the next level. Because that was one thing that you heard with Shang-Chi was, like, oh, it's the best hand-to-hand combat we've seen in the MCU since Winter Soldier.
Right.
And I'd have to go back and think about it, and like, I probably agree with that. But I think what they were kind of more so alluding to was that when you have superheroes fighting other superheroes, or superheroes fighting like a million other super creatures or whatever, it's kind of all lost in translation. I love that that never really happened in this movie, even in the crazy world with Doctor Strange, right?
Yeah.
Even with that like mirrored universe that they were in, I still felt like as a normal person, I could like latch onto something and really kind of understand and feel the fight, which I loved. But so my moment, explosion of emotion, was exactly the one you talked about. I'd even forgotten like maybe how it hit me when Andrew Garfield did not catch Gwen. And the way that they kill her in Amazing Spider-Man 2, the fact that it catches her like as she hits the ground, it's like it happens simultaneously, so you don't know. And of course, the you know what happens afterwards is history. But like, I thought the execution of that with the subtle reference beforehand and the fact that Tom Holland just could not save her, I totally teared up. I was like, that is all the things that I love about Spider-Man, all the things I love about superheroes, and like all the things I just love about watching movies. Just like this raw emotion created from just completely fabricated out of nothing. I was so attached to the idea that he was so hurt that he lost someone else, that him saving Zendaya would make him feel that way. I don't know. I was just kind of blown away by that moment.
Well, yeah, and we're going to get to talking about the rest of the films, and there's definitely moments in Spider-Man, in Amazing Spider-Man 2 that I think are worth touching on for that reason, because it's the one thing that I told my good buddy Val, who I talked to about this stuff all the time. He hadn't seen any of these movies, and he's like, dude, I'm watching Homecoming right now. I was like, all right, well, you got to watch Homecoming. I was like, then find a video online that explains to you everything you need to watch before Infinity War. You'll get some video that'll tell you that in 10 minutes. Then watch Infinity War, and then Endgame, and then Far From Home. And I was like, and if you really want to get crazy, before you watch, you should probably watch Amazing Spider-Man 2. He was like, what? And I was like, trust me, man. It's just going to hit you harder. It matters. And I do think it does. I do think like that's the thing, that's the big takeaway moment that creates.
That's so funny you say that about Amazing Spider-Man 2. Over, I think, like, the majority will say Amazing Spider-Man 1 is exponentially better than Amazing Spider-Man 2. But, yeah, that one moment is so worth it. Because we were there with another friend who had not seen the Amazing Spider-Man movies. And she was like, she could tell she had missed something monumental.
Yeah, for sure.
Because in that moment, it was like the three of us guys were just like, you know, and like, and she was like, what's going on? Like, what? Of course he's going to save her. Why? When doesn't Spider-Man save the girl that's falling, you know? So I thought that was cool. Is there anything else you want to point out about your theater going experience before we start to move on?
No, I think that that pretty much covers it. I just think having that kind of communal theater experience is something that we don't get that much of. I do think it's a little strange that people are, because of the hype surrounding this movie, there's like Amazing Spider-Man 3 hashtags trending. Like people are trying to get, like, and I want to just be like, guys, I appreciate the things that are good about that Spider-Man and those movies, but like the production and money and everything behind another movie in this universe, just because we like sometimes less is more. And this is a perfect example of when the best parts of something are being used here. Like, it's all because it's generational. And we're going to touch on this in just a moment of the power of Spider-Man kind of, but you know, I do think that communal theater experience is something that's unique. We don't get a lot of, and there aren't very many things that can bring people together in this way. It's why every time one of these old, forgive me, white filmmakers who complains about superhero movies in an interview, it's always these guys. It's these legendary filmmakers. And it's always just, it's like, they're always just like, yeah, they're trash movies that are ruining cinema. And it's like, I'm sorry, nobody will pay money to watch your adult drama at a theater. I love your movies. They're very fun to watch. They're some of my favorites. They don't get audiences to rally the same way that you're like, they just don't. I'm sorry. Yeah. The Last Duel is not going to get a standing ovation cheering, but this movie will, which is why this movie's special. And you have to stop talking shit about these movies, you know?
Yeah, because they still created something. They created something that is so unique, so special, because it's like when you talk to people about their best theater going experiences, other than maybe the first time they saw, like, I remember the first time I saw an R-rated movie in the theaters with my mom. It was Gangs of New York. I will never forget that. It was super awesome. But, like, and I remember watching Anchorman in high school, and, like, I don't think anyone, I'd never been in a theater where so many people were laughing so hard. You, like, couldn't hear what was going on. But otherwise, it's just like, oh, yeah, I remember when Cap picked up Mjolnir. Oh, yeah, I remember when Andrew Garfield showed up on screen. You know, these moments that have happened in the MCU are, it takes a decade to make them happen. And then you have to pull that one moment off perfectly. And that's what this whole entire movie felt like. So, you know, before we get into our thesis statement, actually, no, let's get into our thesis statement, because I think this is a pretty important moment. You know, this is something that we brought over from our show, Action Movie Anatomy. It's kind of like it's almost based in hyperbole. It's like, this is the greatest Spider-Man because of this, or this is the worst Spider-Man because of this, or moving forward, I will only watch Spider-Man if this, so whatever it is. But for us, I think after looking at this and looking at maybe the trajectory of what's going to happen with Spider-Man, I think Spider-Man will be this generation's or the next generation's Batman/Superman.
Yeah, I think you're dead on, man. When you first said it, my first thought was, well, isn't, you know, didn't what we just see in the theater, like, isn't doesn't that make it right now? Like, it already is. And I think your point was pretty sound, which was, I don't think so, because one big movie or one big moment doesn't prove it. It's what happens after the big movie or the big moment. It's the steps that follow. And it's really hard to create the kind of fan support that you get behind Spider-Man. I would say the only character that we've had other than Batman and Superman in the superhero world that's had that kind of support prior to the MCU, it's probably Wolverine. You know, he had a lot of support surrounding Logan. He got a few of his own movies. And, you know, the MCU characters, the big three, they all had their own thing going. But, like, if somebody else played Iron Man in the next movie, you know, I don't know how successful it is. I'm sure people see it, but it's not just a foregone conclusion that every version of Iron Man is going to be a slam dunk. Whereas, like, every version of Spider-Man is a slam dunk because people love Spider-Man. Even the bad ones.
Yeah, what's pretty fascinating about that is, like, you know, Wolverine has basically only been played by one person, right? At least all I can think of is Jackman. And then Iron Man's been played by just Robert Downey Jr. But with the other three superheroes we're talking about, they've already had so many different versions of them. They've become like James Bonds in their own respective rights, to where it can just go on forever. We can just start over again, or we can just continue on. Batman with Reeves, Batman with Affleck, Batman with Bale, like, we've literally had like seven different Batman just in our lifetime, you know. So in like, West wasn't really a part, like, I didn't really watch Adam West Batman growing up. So what I think's interesting is, like, it feels like Wolverine and Iron Man are super contained, because if Iron Man were to have survived, if Robert Downey was not as successful as he was by the time that, or as old as he was by the time that, you know, Infinity War happened, we might just be seeing another decade of Iron Man movies, or we might just see that relaunch or reboot. But it feels like, because of the success of the MCU and the direction it's moving, Iron Man has kind of like had his moment in the sun or in the spotlight for a while. And, like, I don't think he'll live on as that guy the same way I don't think Wolverine will. I felt like Logan was kind of like the swan song of this incredible run, and then that's the end of it for a while.
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget the three Hulks, but no, no, I think
very that, true.
All incredible. No, I agree. It's really hard to get that kind of marriage between a character and an actor. People try it. It doesn't always work. Sometimes even a good performance by an actor is not going to get the job done. But you're correct in the sense that the legacy version of the three characters that we're talking about, it's the only one that stands the same kind of time. And I believe they'll cast a really good Wolverine for the reboot. I'm sure they will. I have faith. I'm sure the next Iron Man in the reboot will be good. But again, like, you have to go way further down the line to even have faith that that might happen. And there has to be enough interest in the character for them to keep rebooting it. That's what's crazy about Spider-Man and why we can say he is that guy now. I know there's contract reasons, but they rebooted with Andrew Garfield 5 years after one of the most successful comic book movies ever. Then they made another one 2 years later, and then they only 3 years later made another one. Like, they just keep
crazy.
Like, right? That's so nuts. And so I think to that end, like, people are just so excited about the character of Spider-Man. This movie showed me that he has legs as a character on the same level right now as the other two, as Superman and Batman. And I think the biggest reason Spider-Man is that character for the next generation is because making a high school kid cool is a lot easier than making a 30-year-old square-jawed, super jacked white guy cool right now. That's a harder thing to do. Yeah, billionaire, exactly. Womanizer, playboy. Like, that's just not like where people think. That's like the image right now that like young people are like, yeah, I want to support that dude. Like, right. You want to support the like any version of a nerdy high school kid who's kind of the underdog and he could be into anything. He could, like, you know what I'm saying? You could go so many different ways with the character of Peter Parker in a way that it's way harder to do.
Well, and that was excuse me, and that was like some of the complaint with Andrew Garfield was like he was too cool as Peter Parker, which I didn't actually really get that. He just wasn't as nerdy and as much of an outcast as Tobey Maguire's, whereas Tom Holland just seems like a normal kid in high school. Like, he's not popular. He's got a bully. He's got a best friend. He's got girls that he likes. Like, he just feels incredibly relatable. So, you know, usually I would ask like what your relationship was with Spider-Man growing up, but I feel like we could probably skip that. We're already halfway or half an hour into the show. So let's kind of catch everyone up with where we are with Spider-Man now. So Spider-Man first showed up on the silver screen or on a screen back in 1977. That was the first time ever. It was a TV movie called Spider-Man starring Nicholas Hammond, who apparently was really hoping and waiting for someone to reach out to him for No Way Home. But yeah, that, 1977, Nicholas Hammond, never heard of him, never saw it. Did you ever see this?
Sorry, Nick. No, I didn't ever watch that. Or I know in 78, there was like the cartoon show. I never consumed any of that stuff. Right. Like that early Spider-Man on screen stuff. I know about it. We've seen images, but I've never watched any of it.
I think I watched a little bit of like animated Spider-Man something growing up, but I never was able to like really attach to him the same way that I did like Batman and Superman or even kind of Iron Man. For some reason, I felt like I watched a decent amount of Iron Man growing up and I knew more. I don't know. It was weird.
Well, you're actually talking about something that I'll bet you most of our audience remembers, because that was the big moment in the early 90s, which was there was the Spider-Man cartoon. There was the X-Men cartoon. There was an Iron Man and a Fantastic Four cartoon called the Marvel Action Hour. They were all about 1994. It was all that moment when comic books got really popular when we were little kids. They were selling action figures. Toy Biz was making the action figures. And because Toy Biz had the figures out, they had the show to sell the figures. And so we all watched a pretty good amount of those characters in that early to mid 90s run. That's the only like that's the biggest Spider-Man that I think a lot of our generation grew up with.
Now, what's really interesting about this conversation, though, is like, I guess I actually will go back to your relationship with Spider-Man growing up, because, you know, in 2002, you and I were only, 13 or 14, excuse me.
Yeah.
So it's like we were still pretty much kids, you know, and like, do you remember when Raimi took over? He got the rights with Sony in 1999. And then obviously 2002 is when we got Spider-Man for the first time on the big screen. Do you remember this like moment at all in history for you?
Yes, dude, actually. And this is great. So growing up, I worked at a comic book store for store credit when I was 10 years old, and I worked there every week. And, you know, I was born in 88. So in 1998, when Blade came out, when we were 10, that was the first comic book movie of our, like, that was the first successful commercial movie.
Dude, I have to tell you really quickly, just a total aside, when I was doing my CRL World Finals broadcast, I said, you know, sometimes guys are just trying to ice skate uphill. And my co-caster, who is 21 years old, he like stopped dead in his tracks. He goes, did you just come up with that on your own? He goes, I know we should move on through the show, but did you just make that up? And I go, no, man, I stole that from Blade. And it's definitely a PG version of what he said. I just thought that would make you so happy, because he's young, we're old. I referenced Blade. He had no idea what I was talking about.
Yeah, some mother effers are always trying to ice skate uphill. It's a great line.
It's a great line. Anyway, what were you saying about Spider-Man?
So Blade comes out in 98, and because it was commercially successful, and at the time Marvel was bankrupt. They were going through bankruptcy. So they were selling off their properties to studios to get to make money, basically. So Sony got the rights to make Spider-Man, but first X-Men had to get made by Fox. That happened in 2000. It was successful commercially, so we all thought that it was good. But again, black like leather unitards, that's just not the same thing as blue and red spandex. Yeah. So when this movie came out in 2002, we had already had 4 years of like the kid in me, the 10-year-old kid in me being like, you don't even know what you're in for. My favorite characters are all going to be in the movies right now. Like, this is so crazy. And people be like, Blade's cool. And I'm like, yeah, but you didn't even realize about it. You like a comic book. Like, that was like my life as a 10-year-old. You would love it.
Sick, dude. I bet you were sweet at parties.
And so when this movie came out, Spider-Man 02, I went to a sneak preview screening this guy named Gabriel, who ran a different comic book store that I used to go to, he was like introducing it at the sneak preview and like invited me. He was like, you can come to this. And I skipped school. It was like noon or something. And my parents let me skip school to go watch a sneak preview of Spider-Man. And I like sat in the audience and he like introduced it. And I was just like losing my mind watching that first movie, because everything I had spent my whole entire life to that point reading in comic books, and just the Spider-Man stuff that you watch in these movies get over and over and recycled, like great power comes great responsibility, or the Uncle Ben moment. Like there's so many things like that, that the Gwen Stacy moment, frankly, when she dies, like, these are all things that growing up as a little kid, I've just seen those moments.
Cause she, in the comic books, there's like a comic book, or there's like an edition that comes out about her death, right?
And she gets, it's like Spider-Man 17 or something like that. And she comes out and she gets killed by Green Goblin the very same way. He tries to catch her. It breaks her back or breaks her neck. It's the exact same thing. And that's before Mary Jane. Mary Jane is the second girlfriend. Gwen Stacy is like the death of Gwen Stacy. I believe Captain Stacy dies the same way. So what they try to do with The Amazing Spider-Man is set up that exact same stuff. So when this movie came out in 2002, like my experience with it was more hyped for like a movie than I'd ever been. Like this was a groundbreaking moment as a nerd when this movie came out.
Yeah. And for me, it was just kind of a groundbreaking moment as a kid that loved movies and loved superheroes, right? Like I'd watched the Batman movies. I'd watched Superman growing up. I'd watched the animated shows. I watched all of the animated Batmans and Supermans and Spider-Mans and exactly all the things you're talking about. So when I saw it kind of come to live action, I didn't really realize at the time, because I was like 14, like maybe what was beginning to happen, like this path that we were going on. I loved the X-Men movie as well. So I guess I just didn't really know what I was in for, right? So Sam Raimi does his thing, 2002, 4, and 2007. Mark Webb does his in 2012 and 2014, as you were just outlining a minute ago. And then a couple years later, we see Tom Holland show up in Winter Soldier in 2016. Then he gets his standalone in 2017 with Homecoming. So just to let you guys know, in case, you know, maybe you're not sure of all the appearances that Spider-Man has had over the last decade-ish, because he's been around. Retroactively, they went and confirmed that Iron Man 2 has the first appearance of Peter Parker. It's the little kid wearing the Iron Man mask that Iron Man saves. He's standing in front of like something's about to blow up and he doesn't move, or the tank or something. I can't remember exactly what it is, but Holland went back and confirmed that that was supposed to be Peter Parker. Nothing really more came from that until in Ant-Man, when there was a very fast or very short reference from like a reporter or something at some point where they were like, you know, we got everything nowadays, people that can fly or jump or people who swing or can crawl on walls or whatever. You have to be more specific. And so that was like a really little small Easter egg. And then it was finally in Civil War that we got Tom Holland as Spider-Man. Then it was Civil War, Homecoming, Infinity War, Spider-Verse, Endgame, Far From Home, and now No Way Home. So he's been around. He's been everywhere. And then after No Way Home, there's apparently an animated series that's coming out called, I think I have it here, Freshman Year, which is supposed to be about like the early days as Spider-Man, along with, you know, his episode of What If. So he's everywhere. And before I guess we get to the next part of like the best and the worst, since we're kind of caught up with our Spider-Man history, a very, very quick history. Is it too much? Is No Way Home the perfect cherry on top and it's going to start going in the other direction? Because like I look at this, and in the last 20 years we have had what, like 10 movies that are just Spider-Man centric, just him, and then he's shown up in like 4 or 5 others that aren't Spider-Man centric. Like, is that too much, or is this exactly kind of what we signed ourselves up for?
You know, it's hard to say, because the truth is, if No Way Home doesn't tie those movies together, the Amazing Spider-Man movies, I mean, I don't know how necessary those movies feel. I used to always say that those Andrew Garfield movies, I felt bad for him because I thought that I liked Andrew Garfield, and I felt like he got those two movies kind of squeezed in the middle of the reboot for contract reasons, because Sony had to do it to keep the rights. And now looking back, it's like, just because not all of them are great, not every part of all of them are great, they all feel necessary in some weird way. And they all feel like they should have happened. They all feel like they matter. And I think you can always have too much of a good thing when it comes to movies and television. I think at a certain point, you know, your luck always runs out. The wrong person gets behind it. I mean, we're going to talk about Spider-Man 3 pretty soon, and your luck definitely runs out. But like, I don't know, man, like three more movies in the next, let's say it's, so it's 2021. If they do the same 17, 19, 21 schedule and we end up with a 23, 25, 27 thing. So three more Spider-Mans in the next 6 years, plus in theory, the Avengers movies that he shows up in. Hard to say. It's a lot of Spider-Man. I would rather it was like every 3 years, maybe in the next 10 years, we got three more Spider-Man movies. But I don't know, at that point, Tom Holland, he's so freaking young. He's 25 years old.
No,
I don't
he's
know.
So young. I saw a Hollywood Reporter article that he was saying that he feels like he's done all that he needs to do with his character. And when the time comes, he'll be ready to walk away, yeah. Which I think is crazy. And it's good for him, right? He is so young. It is important that he doesn't just like put his whole nest egg into this one thing. So he's not just typecast for the rest of his life. I think it's good that Uncharted is coming. It's going to show us a different side of him. I heard Chaos Walking. Actually, I saw some of Chaos Walking and it was god awful. But at least he's trying to diversify himself, kind of the way that Evans was doing as he was kind of coming up as Captain America. I think that's really important. So, all right, 40 minutes in, we got to get to the actual best and the worst of Spider-Man. That's why we're here. We're here to tell you the best Spider-Man film and the worst Spider-Man film. We usually like to do the top three, but we do love for you guys to get involved. Ben and I, we are very active on Twitter. You're definitely more active than I am, but I still read everything. And one thing that you and I have seen a ton of the last couple weeks, in the last week specifically, your rankings. I don't care how you do it. I don't care if it's a list, a screenshot of a list, the pictures of the covers. What is your ranking from number one to number nine? Right? There's nine. Yeah, I know what I'm doing on this show. I know. I'm kidding. Number one to number nine. Tag us at Andrew Guy, at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter. We'd love to interact with you guys, discuss with you guys your list, maybe the things that we missed, how crazy our list is, or how in line yours is with ours. So tag us on Twitter. Let us know. We'd love to shout you out on the episode. We'd love to have a conversation with you guys. And that's the best way to do it. So now, the best and the worst, Ben. We always pull the three best and the three worst according to Rotten Tomatoes, and we like to add in the IMDb scores. How did you feel about this list? What did you think about the numbers here?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're actually fairly predictable. I do think it's crazy what you said, which is that No Way Home is the number nine highest ranked movie of all time on IMDb already. You know, the movie hasn't
9.0.
It's been 5 days. yeah. You know, even Das Boot doesn't get a 9.0. No, it's only been out 5. Yeah, no. It's only been out 5 days.
If you love our references to the Golden Compass and Das Boot, make sure to follow our MySpace.
So yeah, I think what I, you know, the three top ranked movies by that they're about what I expected here. Rotten Tomatoes has the top three ranked films at 97, 94, 93% respectively, is Spider-Verse, No Way Home, and Spider-Man 2. And I think that's probably what most fans would assume. On the other end of it, the three worst, 52%. You've got Amazing Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 3 at 63%, and Amazing Spider-Man at 72%. It is weird to look at the fact that like Spider-Man OG and Homecoming are not in the top three. Neither movie is the top three on this list. Like that's, but I guess there's been a bunch of really good Spider-Man movies. So,
well, yeah. And it's crazy. If you also look at the numbers here, out of the nine movies, six of them that aren't in our bottom three, the other six all have a 90% or above on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
And then of course, like you just said, 72, 63, and 52 for the other three films in there. So like, I think that's maybe the other thing about that conversation we had at the top of the show about Spider-Man being the next generation's Batman or Superman is when you go back, let's say in what, 10 years from now, you're like 15 years old, right? Yeah. So you're 5 right now. And then you get to go, all right, there's 9 Spider-Man movies. And you know, by that time, there'll be 3 more, at least there'll be 12 or whatever. There's 15 movies with Spider-Man in them that I can go watch. And then you watch all 15 and only 3 of them are kind of bad.
Yeah,
like, that's pretty friggin' cool, man. Like, that is a reason why the next generation coming up will be obsessed with Spider-Man.
And hey, look, there are good and bad things about all of these movies. What we do on this show to establish the best and the worst, if you've watched before, you know, is we always kind of come up with a list of rankings to the best this, the worst this for each particular movie. That's how we come up with the complex mathematical formula that determines our show's choice for the best and the worst of anything. If you haven't watched old episodes, we've done David Fincher movies, Will Ferrell movies, Denzel Washington movies. This is the first franchise we've covered. And so we've got a bunch of things to cover to talk about here. Now, the first one we're going to talk about today is the best and the worst on-screen chemistry. And this is between Spider-Man character.
Between Happy and Marissa Tomei.
I do which, love them both so much.
I love them so much. I love that, like, yeah, I love that the breakup kind of ends Far From Home and it also starts No Way Home, and Happy is just like despondent. I love Favreau so much.
Dude, the moment too in Far From Home at the beginning when he sees her, when he's giving her the giant check, and like Peter looks over and he does that thing really quickly where he licks his lips. It's like, it's so funny. It's just Favreau just, he just kills it. It's so good, man. It's such a fun, it's such a fun angle that they added. And Tomei is just great. What a great actor.
And it's just so, yeah. And I think like that level of fun also made it feel like she was kind of untouchable, which is why that moment in No Way Home hits so hard. So yeah, the best on-screen chemistry, right? Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, Andrew Garfield, Emma Stone, Miles Morales, Gwen Stacy. And then of course here, Tom Holland, Zendaya.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I did want to point out something that I was going to talk to you about it, but I figured I'd just save it for the show. If you go and watch all three original Spider-Man movies,
yeah,
there are maybe three emotional scenes between Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst that actually have a shot of both of them on camera. I'm telling you, 90% of their scenes are one shots on Toby or on Kirsten over the shoulder of the other one.
Agreed. Yeah. I just rewatched.
They have no chemistry. They can't even show them on screen at the same time. Whereas like you get so much of Zendaya and Tom Holland and so much of Garfield and Emma Stone existing on camera together. Whereas like you literally just get the shoulder and the face 99% of the time in Spider. I was kind of blown away by it. And I think it just has to be, they have zero on-screen chemistry.
Yeah. So safe to say that those two don't take the best on-screen chemistry. And I think we aren't going to go through and do a full on worst of ranking on each one of these, but I think it's easy to say that that is the worst of for that. I don't think without.
I was just kind of blown away by it. It was like, they didn't even try to hide. I mean, it must've been so bad that they just couldn't do a wide shot or they couldn't do a two shot. They just had to do solos.
Raimi also does a tremendous number of one shots just in these movies, period. I mean, beyond just those two, he does a lot of that. There's just a lot of, there's just a lot of that conversation.
Super close-ups.
I think it's just the way that he likes to, he's more cartoonish a little bit with the way that he likes to capture in people's faces. That's why, and Spider-Man 3 is just all that. It's just so much of that with every character. But yes, I agree with you that falls totally flat. Now, honorable mention thrown out to Miles and Spider-Gwen, even though they don't really get to have like a thing. I do love them together, but like,
I love them. And like you can tell the crush is there and the chemistry is there, which I think is also like pretty incredible. I mean, yes, the chemistry is maybe easier to visualize when you can draw it, but the voice acting and the chemistry in their voices and all that and the way that they drew it. I love that. I love that honorable mention. So it feels like we're probably both on the same page with this one, which I think really most people probably are. If it's not Tom and Zendaya, which I'd say is maybe getting higher up there, it's just got to be Stone and Garfield.
Yeah, it's funny. They both have really strong things going for them. The chemistry between Zendaya and Tom Holland, it works really well because it starts out in Homecoming with her being like, I'm not obsessed with him. I'm just really observant. Like all her lines like that are really funny. And she's really charming. And I love their high school romance stuff where he goes to a room and he's like, wanna, and she's like, yes. And like all that stuff is so good. And it makes me, you know, it's like that's the high school romance stuff that's great in coming of age movies that John Watts does an amazing job with in this trilogy. He does a great job with it, but I cannot even begin like the chemistry in Amazing Spider-Man 2 between Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone is so good. It first of all, feels like it's in a different movie. And second of all, it almost saves what is otherwise an appallingly bad movie. Like,
I think it does. I think it does save it to its best ability. I mean, I think that movie without their chemistry would we're talking about their scores here for Amazing Spider-Man 2, 52 and 6.5, 34 and like 4.9 or something like that. I think that's what would have happened if they weren't carrying the weight of that movie on their backs.
Well, it has all the sins. It has all the great sins that go along with bloated superhero movies with too many characters. It does all of it wrong. And like,
right.
It just does the one, like Spider-Man's girlfriend getting a scholarship to move to London and him being faced with like needing to do something about it. Like, it breaks your heart when it's happening. You're like, that can't happen. He's got, and then when you know what's coming too, when you know what's coming, it's even harder, dude. When I on the rewatch for this show, like,
talking about the drop.
Yeah. It just ruins you being like, they're making these decisions and she's got so much promise. Like, they feel like real characters. Their relationship feels, and it was real, which is probably why it feels so real. They dated for 4 years, so
yes. I mean, that again, it's like, it's almost a cheat when we talk about our top four being Zendaya, Tom Holland, Andrew Garfield, and Emma Stone, when all of them were truly in love with the other one at one point of their lives and while they were filming. And the way it's set up, like, I think it's actually a pretty cool moment of like Spider-Man moment when he's falling, she's falling, and he like shoots the web in between everything, and it does hit her just in time, but not really just in time. Yeah, I love the two of them. It's believable. I like that, you know, she's all pissed off at him at the beginning because he's just like blowing her off after her dad died. But then they can't help it, right? They love each other. And that's exactly what kids in high school that loved each other would do, even if you were Spider-Man.
Right.
I agree. The best on-screen chemistry is definitely Stone and Garfield. Now let's get on to the best villain. Now, this is a fun one because what's up?
No, I was going to say there's a lot of great villains here, man.
There's a lot of good. There's a lot of bad.
I mean, that's the only thing. Isn't that kind of amazing? If we're going to say what's the worst thing about these Spider-Man movies, and my answer would be there are some truly awful villains. There's not really much else that's really bad. Like, there are a few things that really don't work. That's the one thing in these movies. There are some terrible villains. But there are also some great villains.
Yeah, there's some really forgettable ones. There's ones that like could have been so much more, I think. I mean, they even made fun of Rhino in No Way Home just because like what on, or like, why? Why do we even try that? And then, you know, I really loved Kurt Connors, but I thought you made a good point when we were talking about Kurt Connors. I loved him as Lizard. Like, I thought he was scary and like pretty badass. And I thought the design of it and the claws, and I kind of liked his voice. I liked all things when he was the Lizard, but when he's just Kurt Connors, the Doctor, he was really kind of uninteresting, pretty one-dimensional. They didn't dive down as deep as maybe I would have liked for him. He's kind of my honorable mention dude he doesn't quite fall below the middle line. He's like just barely above it. But I think truly, when I think about my favorite villain, it's really tough because the Doc Ock moment, I love the losing of the wife. I love how it happens. I love that he's actually not a bad guy. He's a good guy with the chip that is now malfunctioned. And then of course, when he just like bodies 10 doctors, like in a horrifically like brutal way, I think it's super awesome. But right before getting ready for the show, there's only one person that's killed Spider-Man. That's Kingpin.
Yeah.
He physically killed Spider-Man.
It's such a good performance. One punch. Liev Schreiber, such a good Kingpin.
He's so good. I love the character design of it. I love that he is somewhat sympathetic because he just wants his wife and son back, even though he's a horrible person. I love how ruthless he is. Like, he just kills Spider-Man. He hears someone else in the building. He's just like, kill him. Like, kill that guy. Like, everything about this Kingpin, I loved so much. I was going to say Doc Ock, but I had to go Liev Schreiber as Kingpin as my best villain in Into the Spider-Verse.
Man, I almost like am tempted to do an audible same as you did, because we talked about two choices for me just before the show, and I love them both, but I have this real affinity for the one that I want to.
What's your honorable mention?
Honorable mention is Michael Keaton as Vulture, and I honestly the only thing that doesn't lock it in for me is that when he's actually Vulture, like in the suit and fighting, I lose interest in him more. When he's Adrian Toomes and he is like doing business and he's like all his scenes with his daughter in the car, they're so good. He's just such a, and I love his sort of code of honor with Peter too, which is like, I'm going to keep doing my job. If you get near my family, I'll kill you and everyone close to you.
Yeah.
Just stay away from Liz. He's not like, I'm going to kill Spider-Man, I'm demented. He's like, right. And then he even keeps his identity in the post-credit scene. Like, there's so much about that character to love, but.
And like that I love that he pulls out the gun in the car. It's such a weird, but brilliant choice by the filmmakers there. Cause it's like, you are such a little man
that doesn't understand. Like, you talked about Spider-Man not knowing what he's dealing with the weapons, but like, you're going to pull a gun on Spider-Man in a car. Like, he could just snap he could literally just rip your head off right now if he wanted to.
Yeah.
I love that. He was a pretty close, like, second or third for me as well.
Yeah. I think it has to be, and it's close, and I want to choose him, but I can't, because Willem Dafoe is Green Goblin. Even wearing a stupid, silly mask in Spider-Man 1 already kills. He already crushes. He's already, like, amazing. Then when he comes back in No Way Home, he outdoes himself and legitimately almost just steals the movie. Like, he's so good in that movie when he's fighting Peter in the hallway and he's laughing and Peter's, like, beating on him and he's, like, cackling. It's like Joker. Yeah. It's like Joker interrogation stuff. It's so good. And, like, when he's just amazing. But he's a great actor. It's amazing he's not an Oscar winner yet. It feels like he will still win one in his lifetime. And he's perfect. The sound of his voice, he really is one of those actors that, like, in the truest, most, like, Shakespearean sense of acting, he's like, I can transform myself into a goblin if I want to. And he does.
Yeah.
Right?
His cackle and his being able to look so incredibly evil and then look so incredibly pathetic.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, obviously with the way movie magic goes, we know those are probably not shot the same day. And if they were, he probably had plenty of time to, like, get where he needed to, but it doesn't matter. In the movie, it happens like that. And that's all that matters for me as the viewer. He's so good at playing both sides of that. And I heard that he said, like, the only way he would do this movie is if he could do his own stunts and his own fight scenes. And I read another thing about Tom Holland talking about that fight scene that he had with Dafoe, saying that at the end of it, his knuckles were bloodied. He was bruised. And they were both completely just dead, exhausted. And he's like 40 years older than Holland.
It's amazing.
Like, so awesome. So freaking awesome. I'm almost going to talk myself into him being my number one villain. But let's move on. Let's move on to the last couple categories here, specifically relating to Spider-Man, which is the first one. Who is the best Spider-Man in the suit?
Is this one just a slam dunk too? Because this one feels like I really want to talk myself into a different choice. But I think when it comes to Spider-Man in the suit, a big part of that is the stunts, the flying around, the webs. And, like, that gets better. That just gets better with every generation CGI. You go back to the old Toby stuff, it's hard for him to look as cool because it's aged. It just hasn't aged as well. You even just go back to Andrew Garfield's first movie. It's almost a decade ago. The stuff with Tom Holland looks phenomenal. Continues to look phenomenal. The eye doesn't catch any of the CGI, really. I just think it has to be Tom Holland.
Yeah, I mean, so when we're talking specifically about the suit, it's pretty impossible to compare because, like, Tom's suit is designed by Iron Man.
Right.
Right? Like, that suit is beyond. It's like a $1 billion suit plus. So like, what about the other things in the suit that Spider-Man can do? Like, the fighting or, you know, like, does he embody what you think? Like, the swinging and the woo and the, like,
right.
It all feels like they do a pretty good job of being Spider-Man in the suit. So I think I kind of go back to you and what you were saying, where it just feels like the best Spider-Man in the suit, they were all great. But Tom Holland, because of when the movie came out and, like, what his suit could do and where CG is, I think it's just kind of, like you said, I think it's just a no-brainer. I think it just has to be him.
The closest thing is that I like Andrew Garfield's, I know this is like a weirdly specific thing, but I like his physical build for Spider-Man in suit the most of the three. He's like taller and lankier, and he feels the way Spider-Man as a kid to me always felt in the comics, which was like, just like, real like tall and long and kind of ripped, but like Holland feels kind of short. It's hard for him not to feel kind of short. And Toby just doesn't feel like he has the build that I always imagined Spider-Man would have. Now, that's not to say that any of them doesn't have a good build, but I think that Garfield is the one that, like, has the closest thing to a comic book character build in the suit.
He's like a little taller, a little lankier. He's got longer limbs, which kind of feel more spider-like. And then I think with, to talk about Tobey Maguire, I have to admit I did like the way his suit looked for it being 20 years old now, going back and watching it and, like, I actually kind of dug the Venom suit. I really did.
I actually
kind of liked the color of it, even though he never got to, like, we didn't get what we wanted out of that Venom interaction. I think it's just Tom Holland. So in the other category, it's not the best Peter Parker, because we do have Miles in this conversation. We do have Miles Morales. What's the best Spider-Man out of the suit? Who embodies that teenager, or at least your experience of being a teenager and all those things, the absolute best. Because I will say, going back and watching the originals, I thought Tobey Maguire did a really good job being that kind of Peter Parker. The problem is that the franchise continues on and like he just kind of becomes a shit. Like the way that Sam Raimi wanted him to be over, you know, movies two and three. Movies two, he like has, you know,
a crisis of identity thing.
Yeah, he's got like an inability to be Spider-Man. And then in Spider-Man 3, he like goes out of his way to what he thinks is murder someone. He like kisses another girl while he's Spider-Man, but I guess that's not being Spider-Man. I guess both those are not Spider-Man moments, but like, I mean, are not Peter Parker moments, but yeah, the jazz flute, the dancing, the emo, like all of those things, it ruined him as Peter Parker for me.
I really dislike Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker. I like kind
even
of
in the first one.
I just sort of hate everything about him playing that character. I sort of felt it when it first came out. I wasn't able to own it as well back then because it was all we had. And the movies themselves, one, two, were both pretty good. Two was awesome at the time. So like, yeah. I thought that this was like, okay, it's weird. Like the way Avi Arad and Marvel and all those guys put together those initial movies, it felt like this is what would happen if you put a comic book into a movie. And it can't look the way that it looked on the page because it's not a comic book. It's a real person in a suit. And like, of course it won't be as cool because it's going to be a movie. So I'll just accept what I get. And that's how the first X-Men movie felt. And that's how the Spider-Man movie felt. Flash forward to the MCU. And it's like, actually, you guys were all idiots. You can do it. It looks just like the comic books. It's better. The casting's better. The performances are better. And it actually feels like reading a comic book. This is the way we should have done it. But you tried to hedge your bets and put the X-Men in black leather. And like, that's, I mean, that's true. And like,
yeah, yeah.
So when I go back and I watch the movies, I'm sort of like, I understand that Peter Parker's supposed to be sort of a dweeb. Like he's supposed to be like really meek and a nerd and like not confident. That's all fine. He isn't likable is the problem. He's not a likable character. Yeah. And that's where that character loses me so much. Is
kind of
like
Weasley.
He just sucks. Like,
I don't want to hang out with that guy.
I just don't root for him at all. Like, I wouldn't, you know what I mean? Like, I just, by the time the movies are over, I'm just like, man, I just hope you get wrecked, bro. Like, I just am not a big fan of you. And so he just, yeah, I think that's, it's crazy that Tobey Maguire was the choice back then.
And then you go to Andrew Garfield, and like, I mentioned it before, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Did you think, like upon rewatching Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2, like, did you get that thing people were talking about that you're like, he was too cool and that girls were already into him and that like, he's kind of a bully? I didn't really get any of that stuff.
He's like a sexy nerd with a skateboard who beats up Flash Thompson.
Right. But it's like Peter kind of beat up, or I mean, didn't Tobey Maguire kind of beat up Flash too? Isn't that what that guy's name was? The big guy that tried to fight him in the hallway that's played by like a 42-year-old?
Joe Manganiello, right?
Joe Manganiello. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
he kind of beats him up too, right? Like he punches him all the way down the hall.
They do a thing that with both movies. They steal a scene in both movies out of this late 90s comic book run called Ultimate Spider-Man, and it's the same kind of deal where one of them joins the basketball team and he like dunks and shatters a backboard. They take that shot and they try to be like, what happens if Peter Parker all of a sudden is strong and cool? He'd be full of himself and he'd like act way more brash. And you get elements of both things. I have no issues with that in Amazing Spider-Man. I don't think he needs to be like Tobey Maguire is literally supposed to be kind of squirmy. He's supposed to be sort of that. And Sam Raimi, the director that he is, making The Evil Dead, like he's like a campy director who likes to make like grimier stuff. So it's not surprising that he would make a character like that feel that way. It's just that in the end, a Spider-Man movie is supposed to be sort of inspirational and exciting. And like, I think that I will take Andrew Garfield's slightly too cool version over the other like any day of the week.
So I'm going to go with my best Spider-Man out of the suit. And I think the reason why this is my choice is because in Into the Spider-Verse, there are already so many other Spider-Men and women surrounding him that the movie is really more about Miles. It really is. If his name was Peter Parker, it would just be a Peter Parker movie with Spider-Man in it. And that's really what I felt. Like, yes, you see him turn into Spider-Man. And yes, you see him fight Kingpin. And yes, you see him like really kind of figure out his actual power. But so much of it is just like him trying to figure out his relationship with his dad and this girl and his uncle and school. And And then with being a superhero and how that works, and can he do it and can he not do it? And there's so much cool stuff about it that I realized that Miles Morales is my favorite Spider-Man out of the suit. And I think it's because, luckily for at least me making this decision, there was already so much great Spider-Man in the suit that he could literally just be the kid figuring everything out, which is why I loved him so much.
I got to go Tom Holland. I'm with you. I'm like with you. And I think he's great. And I love Miles. And I wouldn't be shocked if after the second Spider-Verse movie, it starts to shift more in that direction. But as for now, I'm just so enchanted by like how much I love watching Tom Holland be in high school and like just be a high school kid. He embodies like that stuff so well, you know. When like Jake Gyllenhaal's like, Peter, what do you want to do? He's like, I want to go on my school trip and go to the Eiffel Tower and tell the girl that I like how I feel about her. Like, he just kills it, man. He's just such a good Peter Parker. I don't know. I love him.
And like this, the decisions that he makes as Spider-Man feel so much more like Peter Parker in a suit than like putting on and taking off the mask and changing personalities completely. Like, he makes so many mistakes that a kid would make as Spider-Man because Peter Parker bleeds through so much. And then at the end of No Way Home, you get that incredible moment between him and Zendaya and kind of Nate, but Nate doesn't even know he's there, where that feels like the ultimate Peter Parker moment for Tom Holland. A grown-up Peter Parker in that moment, realizing that he needs to separate himself from the people that he loves to protect them. And the way that he does it just feels so adult. I mean, Tom Holland is probably like a millionth of a percent behind Miles Morales for me. And I honestly might have just been because I didn't want to just say Tom Holland over and over and over for our categories. But yeah, he definitely is my number two by a mile above the rest.
Yeah, I'll be shocked. I'll be shocked if after the next Spider-Verse movie, it's not a real conversation for me anymore. But yes, I mean, even him being stuck inside that bunker and being like, what time is it? Oh, no, the debate team final.
Like, hey, Karen, how long have we been here? 37 minutes. He's like, what? We got to get out of here. He's just like he's like when kids used to call their kids like a spaz. Like, that's kind of what he is, it's but incredible. In the best way possible.
So good.
All right. So, do you want to do the franchise take it or leave it?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, what this is, we're just going to go through each of the franchises and really just talk about essentially the best of the worst. But if you could carry one thing forward from it or something you would never want to see again, what would that be? We'll start with Sam Raimi. You know, I think for me, from the Sam Raimi stuff, the thing that stands out that I like the most, I do like Molina a lot. But the thing I think that really works for me in the Raimi franchise is I really love Rosemary Harris's Aunt May. I think she does. Yeah. She's like an Aunt May of another era because she feels more like Grandma May in a lot of ways in those movies. She really doesn't feel like, given how old Peter is, she feels way more like she's in her like late 60s. It's like she feels like a much older sister to a parent, but I don't really care. I love, like, she's beating up Doc Ock with like a purse. She's like a little old lady.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
she has such great moments though with Peter in all three movies. There's great emotional moments in there. I agree. I think she is really truly the standout after, you know, time has told us in 15 years. It feels like she is the one thing I'd really like to take because I don't have to pick Alfred Molina or Willem Dafoe anymore. They're not just in that franchise, right? But she is not in the MCU. Like, that version of Aunt May is not. And yeah, even like in the first one, when Goblin goes to attack her, she's like such a feeble old woman. And then she goes into like hysterics in the hospital. She's just great. She's like maybe the best performance all throughout other than Molina and Dafoe. She's like on par with them. The thing that I want to leave from the Raimi universe more than anything, why did they try Venom and then shit the bed that badly with it?
Dude,
all the mistakes they made, the dancing, the emo, the web impotence, all of that.
It's so bad. The middle of the third movie, I was watching with my dad, and he was like, you know, he kind of enjoyed Amazing Spider-Man 2. Like, he had a pretty good time with it because he liked the love story. He knew that like Electro was ridiculous, but he had a good time with it. But like, we got to Spider-Man 3 and like that section started and he was like, this is fantastic. He's like, what an outrageous movie. And I was like, I know, man, but like, this is supposed to be kind of funny, but like, it seems like they're making fun of this movie in the middle of the movie. When he starts doing, I sent you that text, like it literally is like, if you put on the symbiote,
is what you said to me.
If you put on the symbiote, it amplifies what you're feeling. And it's like, well, Tobey Maguire must have just watched Anchorman because he decided to like really amplify his love of the movie. He like, I don't even understand what's happening. He goes in and he says, find us some shade, hot legs, to the waitress. And then they sit down and like they've decided to portray Gwen Stacy as this like model bimbo. I don't even know what that decision's about because like she's supposed to be likable. She's not even remotely likable. No. He starts like, I just, it's like uncomfortable what's happening. And then he hits MJ.
And then he hits MJ. He actually hits her. And all the while there's like just cuts of his finger guns that just keep happening over and over that Sam Raimi's like, yeah, more finger guns, Toby. I'd like to give one more pickup of that. Okay. So that's the Raimi one.
It's like astonishing. I don't know what's happening.
The idea of your dad just sitting back like, this is hilarious, makes my day.
Well, because then also, like, as you said, it continues into this like total just like punt of Topher Grace's Venom, who like looks pretty dumb and then also exists in the movie for like 20 minutes before he just gets blown up. Like,
and then doesn't Tobey Maguire make some reference to him like finding God or like needing to seek a higher power? He does something like that. And then he's just in the church at the same time as like, it was just so sloppy. Like everything about it was so sloppy.
Talk to a preacher. Something like
that. I don't remember what he said, but he made some reference and then it's like, okay, of course, now they're both in a church for the next time they see each other. That makes sense. All right, let's move on to the Amazing Spider-Man movies. What's your leave it for this one?
Jamie Foxx's teeth. no, I think
his
it's
hair.
I think it's just the villains. The villains are really bad in these movies. Like the lizard is kind of good. Like there's enough about the lizard that I like. It's okay. The rhino thing is so dumb. The when I talked about earlier the greatest sins of mid 90s comic book movies or mid 2000s comic book movies, it's shit like Dane DeHaan being like, I'm going to inject myself and then crawl. And then there's this suit that you don't even see me get into. I just am in the suit and know how to fly perfectly. And like,
also the suit heals him.
Yeah.
It heals him.
It's just like, what in the actual, like that happens. And I was just like, who was watching this get made and reading the script and being like, hey, we don't have to go to reshoots. This all works.
Like, it's good.
He's going to kill Gwen Stacy, really, by the way. He's going to kill Gwen Stacy, by the way, and that's going to be a satisfying payoff that this idiot's the guy that killed her. Like, what?
Yeah.
No wonder they never made a third movie.
Yeah, it is really a bummer. The villains were so bad, and it just kind of goes back to what you and I talked about over half a decade ago. In order to have a great action movie, you have to have a great villain. You really do. And we saw that in No Way Home. Again, even if they're recycled villains, they're still better. I think the thing that I would like to take from this franchise is, it's like, you can't take Gwen Stacy. She's dead. You can't take the relationship between her and Spider-Man. I think what I would have liked to see, and this is almost a cheat because of what he said in No Way Home, I'd like to take that Spider-Man. And I heard maybe he goes into the Venom universe with Tom Hardy, the Andrew Garfield one does.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wish we could take the dark Spider-Man. I want to see the Spider-Man that doesn't pull his punches, that just goes out and straight kills people because he's so angry. And I would like to see Andrew Garfield do that. Like, I know at the top of the show, we're talking about like, just because you have some of a good thing, sometimes less is more. I do agree. But for the purpose of this conversation, for me, at least, that's what I wish I could take away. Do you have something else that you'd want to take away from this?
I was just going to say, if you know, because again, she is dead, so you can't take her moving her forward. But what I think you could do is, if you're going to deal in like Spider-Verse type of stories, if you're going to deal with multiverse different realities, I would love, I don't think you can just bring Gwen back and just have us continue with that, because like that just doesn't work. But if we were to somehow get another Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man movie or something that involved him, and it was in Multiverse of Madness, I think there being a storyline with him and Gwen, and like knowing that he's got 24 hours with her before she like ceases to exist or something like that, like a last day, time to say goodbye, like Onward, Pixar type of thing, where it's like he's having to let her go. those types of things are always really sad and heartbreaking. And I just think with their romance and him losing her the way that, and then now living all this life without her, that's what I'd want to see. I'd want to find a way to have a proper emotional goodbye with those two characters that we didn't get. Because after seeing him in this movie and then rewatching these movies, like, it sucks that that beautiful romance with those two performers, and it was so recent. I mean, for God's sakes, that movie came out 7 years ago, dude. We started doing AMA 6 years ago. That movie came out a year before we started the show. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, 2014 wasn't that long ago. Like, they're young, both of them. They're in their 30s.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, we saw Garfield in the suit. We see Emma Stone winning Oscars and doing anything that she wants. Like, they could both just pull it off, like, easily. They could pull off them in college, them in their early 20s, mid 20s, whatever it needs to be, however that is. Okay, and then from the MCU, this one, I think we're going to ignore the Spider-Verse for this conversation just because it's only one movie. I don't think there's anything we want to really point out to take or leave quite yet. But in the Spider-Verse, or excuse me, in the MCU, I think for me, the thing that I wish that we could have left is Mysterio.
Yeah.
I just didn't, you know, I think the first time I watched it, my expectations were not met and I was pretty dissatisfied. And so when I went back and watched it again for the show, I remember liking Far From Home a lot more than I did in the past, but it was only because I liked Peter and I liked Zendaya and I liked the high school part of it, the love part of it. I don't know. I just didn't really work for me. I thought I was like, I get that it's hard to execute because he's all about, you know, tricking you and in like a master of illusion or whatever, but like,
I agree, man. I had a lot of problems with Mysterio in that movie on my rewatch. I was shocked at how much worse I thought it was this time through than the first time. The big takeaway for me is like after they pull off the plan and like the twist happens and he's like revealing the plan and they're like, we're going to show you all these big moments in the MCU that you watch from this angle, but standing in the background was this character.
And was this like, scientist.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, and you're like, wait, but this is an incredibly complex and intricate plot. How are you just explaining the plot to all of your people again, like toasting them instead of just like, thanks, Melvin, for handling the images. Thanks, Claudia, for coordinating. Congratulations. Except that you stood there and he codenamed. Like, I was just like, this is so dumb. My dad was like, yeah, this is
really
dumb.
He called it barf. My life's work. He called barf. Like, I would have so much rather had flashbacks. Like, yeah. Even though they did both, they did like flashbacks or like they put it on screen and they talked through it. Like, I don't know. There was just a better way to do it. I agree. That part was really rough. For me, one thing I take. What's up?
I was just gonna say, I agree. I think Beck is he's the biggest miss from the MCU verse so far, Spider-Man wise. Yeah.
The thing that I would take from the MCU for Spider-Man is literally just the suit. Like, I understand things are going to change, but like the idea of what they've done with the Spider-Man suit in the MCU, and they just keep next leveling it every single movie. Like, they didn't ever talk about the legs. They just showed up and they were incredibly awesome in Avengers. Right.
Yeah.
And then they came back when he was fighting Doc Ock on the bridge. Like, there's just so many cool things about this suit. I just hope no matter what happens in Spider-Man in the future, they keep making his suit super awesome.
Well, yeah, I mean, what we see at the end of the movie is he runs around in like a light blue, like shiny costume that he like sews himself. So like you wonder if this next trilogy is going to be like starting over. And like none of the stuff that we're talking about is around. Well,
like,
I guess
the Stark stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and something will happen. But yeah, agreed. I mean, I do think that stuff was really, really, really cool. Yeah, maybe happy. Maybe it's happy. Maybe happy is the thing that I hope continues on. I love happy, man. Like, it'd be super fun to have happy be in still in on it. But then again, he's part of the Stark stuff. Maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. That's hard. It's hard to say because we're in it right now.
We're in the middle of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just like all of it. But yeah, I think those are our take it or leave it on the old franchise. So anyway, you have heard our arguments. You know what we think on this. So, you know, if you're watching right now and you want to get in on the conversation, if you're watching on video, leave a comment below. If you're listening to this on audio, screenshot your app, your podcast app, and tweet at us. Just let us know. This is my thoughts. I agree. I disagree. Interact with us. We'll interact right back. It's our favorite thing to do. We'd love to talk to you guys about this stuff. And we appreciate you guys watching the show to this point.
So here we go. The best and the worst of Spider-Man. Let's start with the worst. Our ninth ranked movie, and I had to agree with you. I really did. So I wanted to put Spider-Man 3 as the worst movie, but you made a really good point. There's stuff in that movie that no matter how bad it is, it has stood the test of time. It is still enjoyable to talk about. It is hilarious to watch back on repeat. So for that reason, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 is going to be our worst ranked Spider-Man movie, because other than Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone, and I guess The Drop, there's like nothing worth revisiting this movie for.
Yeah, the one other scene I liked from it is when he's talking to Aunt May and she's just like, no, I don't want you to find out about your parents. And he's like, you're enough. Like, that whole scene was great. That scene kind of got me. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, this movie's 2 hours and 20 minutes long and it has like 30 minutes of movie that I want to watch, maybe 25 minutes. Most of the movie is absolute garbage. Even like Dane DeHaan coming back, like Chris Cooper looking like a crazy person is just totally wasted. It's just,
yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 is really bad.
I like forgot that he was in that movie until watching it again this last week. And I was like, what a waste, man. What a freaking waste.
He's like putting in acting there. He's going for it. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he took that part seriously, I'm sure. I mean, you have them dangling like Felicia, who I think, isn't that Felicia Masters or something like that? Like Black Cat, maybe. I'm probably all over the place. But anyway, I mean, you know that like Felicity Jones is in there as a character that they're setting up to be somebody of note. And she's just dropped. Like the movie is just a complete train wreck. And it's, look, if you want to be completely honest about the way this stuff works, just because we like the character of Spider-Man does not override the goal of the studio, which is ultimately to make money. So when you make Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 and they're both really successful, it's amazing the MCU got everything back on track. It's the whole middle section, Spider-Man 3 all the way through Amazing Spider-Man 2. It's a bunch of rushed sequels. It's 2007 to 2014, three movies in 7 years, all of which are sort of confused.
With two different Spider-Men.
Yeah, all that are confused about what they're trying to do with too many villains and like, there's a ton of villains in those movies. It's like all the villains happen in those three movies, you know?
Yeah. And like, why didn't they just learn from the first one that like, or the first franchise that like one is enough?
Yeah.
Green Goblin is enough. Doc Ock is enough. You don't need to start throwing in three villains a movie just because they started doing it in Spider-Man 3, our eighth ranked movie on the list. And, you know, again, you made a really good point and it sounds like your dad hit that point home. Even though it's so stupid in the middle, and even though it's so ridiculous, like, it sticks with you. It's made its mark on history.
And weirdly enough, Spider-Man 3, the first like 45 minutes of the movie, like, sort of works. Some of it actually works. Like when Eddie Brock is trying to steal his job, it's fine. Like when that stuff all happens, like when he's getting really full of himself as Spider-Man, and he's like, you know, Gwen gets fired. A lot of that stuff actually works. It's really only when he starts to go totally crazy. From that point on, the movie is just absolutely unwatchable.
Yeah, and then also Franco going full soloist is enjoyable.
I forgot about that. That's my other favorite part of this movie. I enjoyed like Franco being like,
"Hey Peter, how are you?" It's
like, my best, you like that? My best friends. I would die for them. I mean, like, and that even starts out with Franco in the second movie, just going for it so hard. Because in the second movie, every time, like, you know, Peter will show up and he'll be like, "Hey, Harry," and he's like, "Oh, Pete, you're late," and he'll be like, "Oh, sorry, come on, Siri, get out of here." He'll be like, "Hey," I'll be like, "Oh, Pete, you're late." He's like, "I was just out taking pictures." He's like, "Of your friend Spider-Man," and like, you know, just like that's like,
he's like, "Hey, Pete, where were you?" "I was in the bathroom with your friend Spider-Man."
Like, every if you time. Love me, you tell me who he was. You know, he's just so extra. And so then the third movie happens. I don't know, dude. It's pretty rough.
You pointed that out to me, and then when I went back and watched Spider-Man 2, I laughed so hard because he does it in every interaction they have. He says it. He says something that's like, "Oh, of him, of your buggy little friend," or whatever. He's like, there's so many different versions of it. It's pretty tough.
I also love when he's like, "That's what I called you here for, Pete. I'm the other guy." Like, he's just like, he's phenomenal, man. He's going for it. He's so hammy. It's this movie is absurd. God, what a bad movie.
It's so ridiculous. All right, so our seventh ranked movie, to kind of round up the bottom three here, it's a movie that has really good reviews. It's got a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 7.4 on IMDb. probably the highest ranked movie that will ever be in our bottom three. That's Far From Home.
Weird, right? Like, I think the surprise here is that most people really like this movie and don't consider The Amazing Spider-Man to be good at all. Kind of enjoy The Amazing Spider-Man. Like, it worked way more for me on rewatch than I was expecting, for the same reasons that the second one works, right? I like it. And what Far From Home just misses on too many, it misses in too many places. The things that are actually good about it aren't any better than what Homecoming is doing. Like, Homecoming is doing all the things that are good about Far From Home basically just better. And then it just turns into this big CGI fest. And the thing that's the most annoying is that most of what you're watching even happen in the movie isn't even really happening. And the explanation of what's happening is totally dubious. It's like really hard to suspend your disbelief and just be like, oh yeah, drones, right?
Yeah. And like the fact that, like, you know, you see a couple times in the movie, like one of the drones fall, or like he knocks one out during one of the fights. And like, I don't know, doesn't Spider-Man usually always like swing and kick into like a big villain that he's fighting? There was never any moment until he discovered what was going on that he went into the illusion, which I guess is part of how good the illusion, I don't know. Yeah, it was just too much. Like, honestly, maybe in 10 years from now, if Mysterio was a villain and like you and I could literally just like push a button on our computer and we felt like we were in Hawaii, like there would be like that much LCD screens or whatever, they're that accessible and everything looked that there's no way. There's just no way. Like, even with alien technology in the world, I still couldn't believe it. So those are our bottom three. Amazing Spider-Man 2, number 9. Spider-Man 3, number 8. Far From Home, maybe the surprise, number 7. Now let's get into our top three. Ben, I'm going to let you start us off with number 3. And you can add a number or you cannot. It's up to you.
God, I like actually want to argue for Amazing Spider-Man over these movies, but I can't.
Really?
I mean, it's just because on rewatch, I found myself so like mortified by how much I dislike these movies. But you and I argued about this off air, and I'm going to defer to what your opinion on this. And just, I think you're correct, but it's Spider-Man. It's OG 2002 Spider-Man is going to be our number 3. I know guys that like you're thinking, what are the top two? And then isn't there a 2 after this? And it's like,
right.
No, because like all that stuff we're talking about, like I think Spider-Man 2 kind of sucks. I don't think it's a bad movie. I just don't think it's a good movie.
I feel like we all like got sold this package of goods and we never actually, we were like, this box is worth $1 million. Just keep it in your garage. We're like, cool. I've got $1 million box in my garage. Never going to open it. Never going to open it. And then you open it. It's Spider-Man 2. It's not that good. Like the whole, I'm going to say it again, the whole web impotence thing in the middle of the movie and his battle with himself and figuring out who he is. And like, it just goes on for way longer than it needs to. It's like a 40-minute storyline that I can't stand.
They do this thing a lot in the older movies, and they do it some now, but in the older comic book movies, they would do this a lot. And they would go, okay, we're going to take a really iconic cover, a really famous like story or moment from a comic book, and we're going to make it happen in this movie. And like, it'll get the comic book fans excited. So that shot in Spider-Man 2, when you see his suit hanging out of the trash can and he's walking away from it, that's a very famous cover of like, I think it says Spider-Man No More on the cover. And so they're obviously that's what they're trying to do with that, right? They're trying to set up that moment. And ultimately, it just feels like it wastes the momentum of the movie. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, this stems back to, why did he ever shoot webs out of his wrists? Like, why did that ever happen? That was a dumb decision, guys. It's made fun of in No Way Home by like, really? Your body just makes the webs? Like,
but does it come out anywhere else? I love that they asked that. So like, canonically, is that how you say it? I don't know. Is he always had web shooters always in the comics, right?
Yeah, the first movie was like this weird, it was like this weird thing. And again, and a great example of them doing what I'm talking about in a good way, that moment in Homecoming when he's crushed under all the rubble after Vulture blows up and he's pushing up and he's like thinking about all the people and he's like has to, that's like a moment that is originally from a different famous Spider-Man where he's crushed under stuff and he has to like lift himself up. So that one works really well. It's just that, you know, when they try to shoehorn those moments in, sometimes they get a bad result. And I do think that Spider-Man 2, I mean, why do you, for you personally, what is it about Spider-Man 1 that is just better overall? Like, what does?
Oh, and the last thing I'll say about Spider-Man 2 is the amount of conversation that happens with like oh, if you need to get in touch with Spider-Man, or if anything Spider-Man, just talk to Peter Parker. Like, I'm over that. They do it like so many times in that movie. It's like, it's just the same guy. It's the same guy. We know it's the same guy. Okay, so what I love about Spider-Man, which is really what we're supposed to be talking about here, not why it's not Spider-Man 2, why it is Spider-Man. I liked the origin story. I liked the way that it shows him kind of like, you know, even the silly thing on the subway, right? That's in that one, right? Yeah. Right? Is that when he wakes up in this? No.
No, that's in Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah. So in Spider-Man, when he wakes up and he doesn't use his glasses anymore, he's like yoked in the mirror. Yeah. He starts like sticking to stuff, and then he like slowly discovers his powers. I like that a lot. I like that he like the first thing he wants to do with his powers is like win a wrestling match to like buy a cool car to impress Mary Jane. I like the origin story of how he loses Uncle Ben. I love that with great power comes great responsibility. And then like you talked about it, Willem Dafoe is just so good in this movie. The cackle, the laugh, like I like the scenarios they set him up in. I like the fights that they have. I just think it's a better movie through and through. There's the only moment, and I think that's the biggest problem with Sam Raimi in 2 and 3 is he just goes on these tangents about like the inner human existential struggles that we have. And it's like, I don't need that for as long as you've given it to me. I like it in small doses, but like, and that's why I think Spider-Man's the best. It's also just like the tightest, cleanest movie for me.
Yeah, it's a simpler movie than Spider-Man 2. I know why people would argue Spider-Man 2 over it. I get that. I just hate Toby in both movies, so it's hard for me to like really rank one over the other. The things that Spider-Man
2... The kill is sweet. The kill of Dafoe is sweet too.
The things that Spider-Man 2 does better, it does better than like the moments in Spider-Man 1, if that makes sense. But the things that Spider-Man 1 does better, it has it as good or better villain, and it's a shorter movie. It just doesn't feel as bloated. It doesn't feel like they're trying to kill time as much.
And it's a true origin story, right? Yeah. Like it is the origin story, the first time we ever got it on the big screen. And I feel like it was done correctly. It was by far and away, in my opinion. I used to think Spider-Man 2 was the best one for a long time until watching it again. And I just, there's great parts in it. The best parts of Spider-Man 2 are probably better than Spider-Man 1, but there's more bad parts of Spider-Man 2, in my personal opinion.
So now we're down. Now we are down to 1 and 2. I honestly, dude, I'm looking at this and I'm just like, is it really? Are we really? Cause I honestly am.
I know how we were just talking about the comments and stuff. Like at this moment, right now, pause.
Yeah.
And then go and tell us what you think number 1 and number 2 are. I got to know. I got to see it. I don't care how you do it. You know, pause, write it in the comments, tag us on Twitter, be like, "Oh yeah, we were just about to get the top 1 and 2. You told me to pause. This is what I think you're going to say. This is what you actually said. This is why I hate you." No. So I know.
I want to switch it. I do. I want to do it. And I have a strong I'm going to make my case. And if you disagree with me, we'll go it as written. That's what I'm going to do cuz I'm like 50-50.
It's going to be pretty hard to convince me.
Yeah.
I'll admit.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm okay with what's written here, but I'm going to
go 50-50. There's two of us.
Okay. Here is the reason I think Spider-Man No Way Home is the best Spider-Man movie. Here's the reason.
Okay.
Everything that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse does well, and it does. It does things that are remarkable. It does things that are groundbreaking. It does things that change the genre. It does all that as an animated film. You're able to write a clever script. You're able to bring in an amazing animator, get just amazing voice actors, right? But it's still an animated film. Just the same way that when you and I talk about an amazing ensemble cast versus an amazing ensemble cast in an animated movie, it's like apples and oranges. Like we're talking about something different completely. What No Way Home does, it's utilizing the same history. It's utilizing all the same ideas as Spider-Verse. It's going deep into the tank of Spider-Man and bringing stuff back. But it's cohesively somehow making that all work with a live action cast. It's doing the same exact idea, missing one extremely important component, which of course is a young black Spider-Man, which I love. And it's hard to really beat that because it's like a game changer. But aside from that one thing that Spider-Verse does that is groundbreaking, No Way Home's a flesh and blood movie. And it actually succeeds in all the same ways that Spider-Verse succeeds, but it doesn't fail in any of its attempts. And it's not animated. It's not a cartoon. That for me is why. But if you still disagree, they are about 50-50, and I can go with that.
Yeah, okay. So I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. Except I actually think it's harder to pull off those great moments when something is an animated feature when you are in your 30s, or even if you're not in your 30s. I think a lot of us really attach to, unless you were a person that like truly loved anime growing up, you watched it like relentlessly, and you still are a person even now as an adult, you still watch it all the time, you're up on all of it, you've always been a person that's been like, animated has always been better than live action because you can push those boundaries that you cannot do in live action films unless you're going to make it CG, which I'll be able to tell. Whereas in animated things, it's completely seamless, it's fluid, no matter how crazy and fantastic it gets, it's all in that realm of reality. So the first thing is like, let's talk about budgets here. What was the budget for No Way Home, and what was the budget for Spider-Verse?
I
saw the trailer for Spider-Verse 2 as opposed to the trailer for No Way Home, I lost my shit seeing the trailer for Spider-Verse 2. What they accomplished in Into the Spider-Verse with a completely different origin story, right? There's no Uncle Ben moment. There's no Aunt May moment. Gwen is like kind of there. There's no MJ. Like, there's just so much about this movie that shouldn't have worked for someone like me, but it really stuck with me. And it's been years now, and I still go back and I just think of all the incredible moments. Even something as simple as reimagining Dr. Octopus and like how it worked was so freaking cool to me. I don't know, man. It's too tough. I mean, I've seen No Way Home once. I saw it a few days ago.
That's
I
the hard part.
It was cool.
Right. I've seen it one time as well.
I think the hardest thing for me is really just like, let's talk about being original.
Yeah.
And I think Into the Spider-Verse has that in spades. I think it is truly something that like is spectacular and shouldn't have worked, whereas No Way Home is spectacular and it had to work.
This is what's going to happen. I'm going to agree with you that for the purpose of this show, the best Spider-Man movie is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'm happy to do it because I don't think... The biggest knock on my vote for No Way Home is that I saw it last Thursday. We're in the middle of the hype train. It hasn't lived for a year. You have to give credit where credit's due, which is that Spider-Verse blew our minds.
Nick Cage is in Spider-Verse.
It continues to blow minds. Now, in a year, when we have watched the next Spider-Man movie, when Spider-Verse 2 has come out, then I want to go back and I want to revisit this conversation because we may feel different then. I wouldn't be shocked if we feel different then. On the other hand, I wouldn't be shocked if No Way Home is a little less sparkly than it is right now. So
I'm also okay to do something that is unprecedented here on the best and the worst. Never been done before in 7 episodes is that I take Into the Spider-Verse and you take No Way Home and we can just let the audience decide from there. It's up to you, man. If you really want to do it, I'm happy to let Into the Spider-Verse take the win. But I also, it's not lost on me. All the things you said, I completely agree with. I do feel like it's like a 51-49.
Dude, I know. I mean, this is so funny because you and I went into the show being like, look, it's an hour-long show. We've got to stick to the schedule.
I know. I was like, I can't do this. I was like, I don't want to do an hour and 40 just because we're excited to talk about it. I was like, let's make a tight outline. And here we are, hour and 40 minutes into the show. We still can't make up our
minds. So much to talk about. And like, and normally I usually don't want to spring a surprise from the outline on you mid-show, but I just felt so guilty as I was getting to the top of it. I was like, I have to do something. This is like not even reaching a web down while Gwen is falling if I don't try something. And right, I want to go with a split number one. That's what I want to do. I want to go with a shared.
I'm okay with that. I'm okay with the shared number one because I think it's very clear our number one and two, mine is Spider-Verse, No Way Home. His is No Way Home, Spider-Verse. Let's let you guys decide however you'd like to do that. Let us again know on Twitter or in the comments down below. They're both exceptional. I have to say, like, it's really hard to say which one impressed me more because, again, expectations through the roof for No Way Home and it delivered. And then for Into the Spider-Verse, I was like, there's no way this can be as great as some people are saying. And it like really knocked it out of the park for me. So our number one and two are Into the Spider-Verse, No Way Home. You can switch them around however you'd like. Number three is Spider-Man. Honorable mentions are left off the list for us. Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2. And of course, and Homecoming, which is also a really big surprise because I really love Spider-Man Homecoming. It almost feels like it should be our number three, but it's not.
But it's not. Yeah, it's a great movie. I think I love our lists here. I think that they I think they make sense, and I really enjoy doing this show. So that's gonna wrap up the best and the worst for today, Spider-Man edition. There's a lot of good shows coming up this next year to look forward to. Obviously, a lot of stuff came out in these last few months, so there have just a ton of new movies to watch and cover. But next year, there's a huge influx of big franchise movies and stuff that we're excited to talk about. So come the new year, we will be back doing episodes every single week of the best and the worst. We'll be taking off Christmas week. If you're not already following the show, be sure to go and follow on Spotify or subscribe on the podcast app. Leave a rating, leave a review. Let us know what you guys think. And otherwise, we very much appreciate you guys being here and supporting the show. Go to patreon.com/teamaction if you guys want to get involved with our community, hang out, get to know everybody there. It's a wonderful group of people. And we thank you guys all for being a part of this community.
Yeah, it's really great. With even with all the amount of time that you and I had to take off of broadcast, our Patreon was really a great way to interact with the people that support us the most. Even saw a lot of them in person for a Schmodown event. And then we also have those chats that are always going on Facebook. That is an ongoing chat, a relentless chat with our generals, where we can always check in with them. They can check in with us. So yeah, patreon.com/teamaction. Check that out. And also let us know. As Ben just said, we're going to be back in 2022. We're going to be ready to go every single week with new episodes. What are some episodes that you would love to see? And of course, follow me at Andrew Guy. Follow him at Ben Baby Media. You can follow the show at Team Action Show all on Twitter. And yeah, thanks for hanging out. We'll see you guys next time.
And a big time thank you to each and every one of our generals who supports what we do. We love you guys. You're the reason this show gets to happen and this channel and brand continues on. So a huge thank you to our five-star general, Cody Seal, and for our generals, who is, of course, call sign Kilmer. We have call sign Quiz Show, call sign Ripper, call sign Demon King, call sign Caddyshack, call sign The Chosen One, call sign Public Enemy Number One, call sign Kaju, call sign ACP, call sign Freedom, call sign Robin, call sign Kimura, call sign Moses, call sign Galactus, call sign Bartab, call sign Party J, call sign Congo, call sign The Gray, call sign Phantom, call sign Deja Vu, call sign 24601, call sign Hashtag Ladies Night, call sign Ladies Man, call sign JFTB, call sign Wonderland, call sign Quinn, call sign Brosnan, call sign Desperado, call sign Jerry, call sign Outback, call sign Da Vinci, call sign The Slap, call sign The Rock, welcome, call sign Entrapment, call sign Stamos, call sign Dante's Peak, call sign Director, call sign Top Gun, and call sign Gundam. It's a wonderful group of people. Thank you guys all so much for supporting what we do here on Action Industries. We're looking forward to next week, another great episode. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your 2021 and a happy holiday. All right, guys, take care.